It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Oh, good morning, everybody. A happy Monday to you. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's James Hamm. You know, I whined last week about people trying to force the fall season.
Yeah.
Specifically Starbucks. Just welcome to our fall launch on August 22nd or whatever.
Like, I thought you were more opining than whining, but go ahead.
Okay. I opined that people are trying to force the fall season.
That's right.
But then this weekend hit, and I got to tell you, the weather was out in the part of the Bay Area where I live. The weather was beautiful. Oh. I think we had a high of 78 on Friday and a high of 79 on Saturday. And then yesterday, I don't think it got higher than the mid-80s.
Oh, we got rained on Saturday.
Brutal. Brutal. I had windows open. I had college football on Saturday, Florida State and Georgia Tech. And now we're one more Sunday without football until football every Sunday until February.
That's right.
It feels like fall. It felt like fall. I know it's not, because it's going to be hotter today and it's going to be hotter throughout this week. And I can't comfortably wear a hoodie all day yet, which means it's not fall. But this weekend really felt like it.
I have chosen to switch straight to hoodie weather.
You did. You just jumped right in feet first.
I even wore pants today. I haven't worn pants, like I've worn shorts, but I haven't worn pants.
Long pants.
In a long time.
James wears pants to work, everybody. I want people to know that. He doesn't just roll up no pants on. They're just shorts.
Pantsless, yeah. I wear shorts. I don't know. We had weird weather on Saturday. It was pouring when we woke up.
And it's like, oh,
this is weird. And it was rainy like half the day. And then, you know, it started to clear up. But either way, it's like, hey, kind of in sweatshirt mode. And then...
I have to respect it.
Then I threw on a sweatshirt, went to Domantas Sabonis' camp on Sunday, and just cooked. Just like, oh my gosh, what have I done?
It's too hot.
Why God have you forsaken me?
Were you just moving around?
Oh, it was just hot.
In the gym?
In the gym.
Outside?
Inside. It was inside at Hardwood Palace.
Uh-huh.
But there were a lot of people there, and you're moving around, you're working, and it was hot. I'm like, oh, I made a mistake.
So when you go to a player's, I just want to talk mechanics of journalism here for a second. We can get to what Domas actually said. When you go to a player's youth camp, is there a designated time? Hey, Domas will be available for interviews at noon, and you show up at 11:30, or is it you show up when camp starts and you stand around like you're watching practice when actually it's a youth camp?
Yeah, you get a lot more like on the ground than you would at a normal practice. Like, you're allowed in the gym. They've got a little thing there that says, hey, just so you know, your kids will be recorded. Whoever's in the gym will be recorded potentially as, you know, B-roll for local news. So we don't have to go around and find every single parent to every kid that we have in a video and say, hey, we need you to sign a release. So there's a blanket release.
Right.
So you usually get like a window of 15 minutes, 20 minutes of B-roll. And then, you know, the player comes over and does like a you know, maybe 10 minutes of media.
It's a little press scrum.
Yeah, a little media scrum. And it's usually about, you know, you start off with what they're doing at the camp. You know, a guy like Sabonis is the first camp he's ever had.
Yeah, I was wondering about that too, because I feel like this wasn't a thing last year.
No, it wasn't a thing. So Fox has had a camp a couple of years. Monk had a camp this year. You know, to be honest with you, the players, they should do more camps. But we're coming out of COVID, so I know a lot of that stuff was shut down for a while. I'll say this for whatever people think about DeMarcus Cousins, good, bad. His camps were always the best. Not only did he have incredible camps, but he paid for huge amounts of campers from underprivileged areas to come to his camp. He also had VSP there doing vision checks on all of the kids as part of the camp.
Love it.
Paying for glasses for kids who couldn't afford glasses. Absolutely spectacular. I think the guys now, they're just getting back into it. And again, Sabonis has been in the league, what, 7-8 years? He's never been able to have a camp. And,
yeah. And he's bounced around so much, too.
Yeah. Well, that, and he's a player's son, so he grew up going to camps. And those are the guys that you expect to, like, do these things. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of the players, you know, like Fox, or like, they went to Jordan camp, or they went to Kobe mm-hmm. camp, whatever, when they were young. But those are, like, really expensive, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of these camps. And so, I don't know. I thought it was a really, really good atmosphere. You could tell it was his first camp. He mm-hmm. was kind of walking around, like, not knowing what to do. And then he settled in. And like,
Yeah.
Actually, there was a moment early on with him where I could see he was kind of, like, uncomfortable. You know, he has little kids, but these kids are a little bit older. Not there mm-hmm. was probably 4 or 5 year olds. And then
good
all the
Lord.
Way up to, like, probably, like, 12, maybe a little bit older. Anyway, there was this little girl who couldn't make it up to the basket. And instead of, like, reaching down and picking her up and, you know, having her dunk or something,
mm-hmm.
he actually had her pass him the ball, and he dunked in front of everyone for the first time. And everyone, like, got all excited because Sabonis dunked. So I think it was kind of like that moment where he started to, like, settle in a little mm-hmm. bit and, like, okay, I got this, and kind of relax.
I love the idea that instead of doing the typical thing where you pick the kid up and have him dunk, Domas is like, okay, I'm going to do a dribble handoff with you.
Yeah,
THM. Here, you take, I'm going to set the screen. Here, kid, you come running right, and you're just going to get leveled.
Pocket pass. Pocket pass.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So you got to chat for a few minutes with Domas.
Yeah.
And anytime you get to chat with a player during the offseason, that's a fun thing. Find out what they're up to, get their thoughts on what's been going on. What was the, I know there were several takeaways, but what was the big takeaway from you talking with Domas?
He had a couple of things. Number one, he was very clear. He thought Malik Monk was gone.
That was shocking that he said that.
It was shocking too, because he had lobbied so hard and was like, even like had made like veiled threats to Malik, like, hey bro, you better be back, you know, like exit interview stuff. And like during the season, mm-hmm. late in the season. But I think they're, like, if you go back and you watch, like, the look on De'Aaron Fox's face, the look on Domantas Sabonis' face, I think you get the understanding that, like, they thought he was leaving.
That was my take.
Yeah, yeah. So, he was very excited to have him back. You know, sort of, like, the awkwardness of potentially losing somebody that you know means so much. And then not knowing what's going to happen. The other thing was, you know, we did talk to him about he's been working out this last week in L.A. with DeMar DeRozan, mm-hmm. With Boogie Ellis, and then Kevin Herter showed up. Leandro Barbosa and Doug Christie have been there working with them.
Yeah.
So he's been doing that, really getting to know not just DeMar DeRozan, the person, but DeMar DeRozan, the player, and mm-hmm. how to play off of him, which I think is, like, super, super important.
Yeah.
I don't know where they're working out, but they've got, you know, everyone's got ties down in L.A.
Yeah. From what I understand, it's not hard to find an open gym somewhere in L.A.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, I think there are a lot of them. And Sabonis has had a house down in the L.A. area for a long time. And
mm-hmm.
and Doug, you know, spends a lot of time down there. So I'm sure they're between Pepperdine and some of the other places. Even Boogie Ellis, you know, was at USC last year.
Yeah.
So they've been working out. He said Kevin Herter looks great. He looks like he's in great shape. He's hitting his shot. He looks very confident. So he said that. But also, I thought it was interesting. He started to go off on the DeRozan situation a little bit. And that's what I like about Sabonis is, like, there are a lot of times where he's super brief with his answers, but if you're really listening to him, you can understand that he sometimes says things a little too honest. And he said, yeah, he, you know, when DeRozan signed, you know, he was excited, but he said nothing was following through. So he was getting frustrated with the lack of signing players at that point. And I think for him, he really, like, okay, we got somebody. And I think Fox is probably feeling the same way. And I this was a big moment for them, because mm-hmm. I think that they kind of sensed like the offseason was slipping away a little bit, and nothing that they had heard about or knew about was actually going to work out. And so, you know, there was a little bit of a panic mode for some of these players who, you know, when you sign a long-term extension with a franchise, you do so with the understanding that they're going to build around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's always that sort of issue in Sacramento. Like, you can't really usually land free agents, mm-hmm. and like, what's going to happen? It was a good moment.
When we talked about this last year, I was taking notes while you're writing, because there's a lot in there that I want to crack open. But also, roster cuts in the NFL are due tomorrow at 1 p.m., so those are starting to trickle out. If anything major happens with the 49ers or the Raiders, we'll let you know.
Cool.
That's what's happening so far. Matt Breida got released earlier today, according to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler. But we'll have all that for you as well. But back to the Domas camp. One of the things we talked about a lot last year was how it's probably difficult for Domas and Malik and De'Aaron Fox and maybe a handful of others to kind of look down the bench as they went into January, February last year, going, hey, this didn't cut it last year. It's not cutting it this year. We need to get better in X, Y, and Z places. Not anything personal against our teammates, but I think reality of the situation, it set in for all of us who were observing the team. I promise that people on the team saw the same things we saw.
Yeah.
And probably more. So I can imagine that frustration that we felt as fans sitting here going, hey, are they going to do anything? Like, what? Clock's ticking. Like, okay, the patience is great, but like, step on it. Here's all these other teams making all these moves. I imagine the players on the team, specifically the leaders like Domas and like De'Aaron.
Oh yeah.
And Malik once he re-signed, are looking and having the same questions. So I imagine the sense of relief. I mean, we did a whole 6 hours of programming about DeMar DeRozan the day they landed him. I imagine the celebration internally for players like Domas was probably pretty similar.
Oh no, I totally agree. And again, when you're Domas and, you know, going into last season, he renegotiated and extended his contract, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden he's in Sacramento for 24, 25, 26, and 27 and 28. Mm-hmm. Like, he's committed for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
But then you also have this other guy that you expect to be sort of your, he might be Batman and you might be Robin, or you might, you know, mm-hmm. both be Batman in this, yeah. whatever. But Fox is only under contract for the next 2 years. And there's always in the back of your head, like, what if something goes wrong here and De'Aaron goes, okay, it's time. Like, I've been mm-hmm. here too long. Like, mm-hmm. De'Aaron Fox, I think there's a possibility this season will become the all-time leader in games played for the Sacramento Kings.
That's wild.
He will surpass Jason Thompson as the Kings' all-time leader in games played. And so there's this weird possibility that he'll do that this year. But you know, again, if you're not winning, there comes a point where a player hits, you know, he's 26, he'll be 27 in December. And Fox has got to look around and say, okay, is this it? Is this, mm-hmm. are we doing more? Am I going to be able to, can I play the next 8 years here and, you know, go off mm-hmm. into the sunset as a 35-year-old who played, you know, his entire career as a Sacramento King? Or do I need to, you know, mm-hmm. force my way out?
Sure.
Which is totally possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you want to be in a situation where you're adding and where you're bringing mm-hmm. in a star in DeMar DeRozan, mm-hmm. even if, you know, like, he is at an advanced age. He's 35 years old now. That doesn't matter. You still want to feel like you're moving the right direction. So
yeah, and going into a season knowing that the team has picked a lane.
Yeah,
it's not, yeah, hey, just going to kind of run it back and we'll see what's happening at the trade deadline. Mm. Like, no, man, they picked a path and now they're on it. That's at least, at the very least, I think that's invigorating. Whether that translates into a 50-win team or a 55-win team or a 48-win team, couldn't tell you. But at least it's something different.
Yeah.
And it hadn't even occurred to me that that somebody like Domas, because he and the rest of the team was going to, no matter what happened this offseason, they were going to show up at camp and they were going to go to work and they were going to try and win every single game and they were going to try and win a championship.
Yep.
That was going to happen no matter what. But hearing somebody like Domas, who's, you know, not out there super vocal, you know, hearing him go, yeah, it was getting frustrated. It's like, man, I didn't even consider that. Like, that's crazy.
Well, I hope that he was voicing the frustration.
I imagine he was.
Yeah. And I think he's
money.
Also,
I'm frustrated.
I think he's also in the room, like not physically, but like I, sure. I think that like him and Fox, they're at least like bouncing ideas off him.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to now, not that because you don't want the like, LeBron James is kind of the poster child now for the bad player GM.
Oh yeah,
the guy who's pulling all the strings. I think you have to. You don't necessarily want that where you have one player dictating everything your team is doing.
No.
But on the other hand, you can't just ignore your star players when it comes to making those moves. So yeah, I'd be shocked if Fox and Sabonis and maybe even Monk weren't at least consulted or looped in.
Yeah.
What's the phrasing I'm looking for?
Maybe they have a group text.
Yeah, like, maybe just like DeMar DeRozan ? From Monty.
Yeah.
A bunch of thumbs up on it. Yeah, I think you just have to consider, or at least to me, make your star player feel like, or players feel like they're involved in this process.
No, I think so too. And Fox has always been a player who's kind of like hands off.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, not really. Like he acts like he's hands off. And I don't think he's in there like forcing.
Right.
But he also... Like they know that they need to tell him things.
Yeah.
And they know things.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. Like the Foxes, they know what's happening.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting that we're actually getting to a point where maybe they're building something that looks like super sustainable for at least the next couple of years.
Yeah.
And it's something that you had to do at some point.
Yeah.
And you can't just look at this like 3-year window because Fox is out of contract during that 3 years. You need to keep adding. You need to keep you need to make sure that this is the right place for him and that you can prove that this is the right place for him.
The other thing Domas said that was I thought kind of the biggest takeaway, and you said as much, is that he was surprised that Malik Monk came back, and he said that they had kind of gotten the idea. He said, I talked to him all last year, and I kind of got the idea that he was out of here.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to me because it felt like there were two ways that was going to go. It was either Malik was going to go chase a bag somewhere and forego all the other benefits of coming back to Sacramento. That was just going to go out the window. He was going to go where the money was. But it given when he signed and the fact that we know that he turned down more money from other places, I'd be interested to know if there was some kind of change of heart from Malik or if the money just didn't come from teams he thought it would come from, where he would have chased it with Orlando or Philly, but maybe it came from Charlotte and Detroit and he went, no thanks. Or was that just throughout the year he was like, yeah, I might go, I might not. I'm going to keep my options open and just played it that way. I would love to know.
Yeah. I would love to. I think, like, first of all, he is a player that, like, he found his NBA home. You're on the clock.
I'm on the clock. I got a fantasy draft going on right now.
You're on the clock. So he is a player who, you know, has been searching for his NBA home. That's always been a problem it's a problem with a lot of players. I mean, again, it's why Trey Lyles was so... Like he was so clear and like, hey, I want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
But with Monk specifically, you knew he's going to get a lot of money, and you thought he might even get way more than he actually got.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's this certain level with the players where, like, they want someone to come back, and they can't wait to continue the relationship, and they want the team to get better, and they're growing something together, but. There's also like this really clear line where every player goes, but I also want you to get yours.
Mm-hmm.
Go get your bag. Like, I don't care. If you got to leave us, you got to leave us because that's the world we live in. You need to make sure you go get your money.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Fox specifically was so clear on this. Like, mm-hmm. I'd love to have him back, but I got to be honest. He's my friend, and I want my friend to be financially set for the rest of his life. More than that,
I want to see the homies get paid.
And I totally, it's a really interesting dynamic because most people wouldn't understand it if from the outside it's like, hey man, like come back, you know, give up a little bit of money. It's like, well, you didn't give up any money. So why should I have to give up any money?
Right.
Like you and Domas just got you got paid.
Yeah. Darren's got an extension coming up.
Yeah. Like there's a Brinks truck that shows up to your house like 12 times a year. That's gigantic.
In fact, Darren could have already signed an extension, but he didn't.
Yes.
In hopes of getting, wait for it, more money.
Yes. If Fox makes all NBA, he goes from potential making like 25% of the salary cap to making 30% of the salary cap.
Right.
Like, and that's so much money. Like people who aren't paying attention to how much money he already makes, the difference in 5% is astronomical when you're making $35 or $40 million. Yeah.
So, I will take 5% of $35 million right now.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to do that.
Yeah. And then the
175,000?
No,
that's
1.75 million.
Yes, there we go. I was off by a decimal.
Yeah. So, and that's like, and it keeps going up, right? So, so every year, you know, you're going to make more and more money. So again, if it's a $40 million starting salary and it's 5%,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's $2 million starting salary that goes up and up and up and up over the course of you know, a 4-year deal or 5-year deal. Plus the other kicker is if you make all NBA, you're eligible for the Supermax, which means that in the NBA right now, you can only sign, if you have 1 year left on your deal, you can sign a 4-year extension.
Mm-hmm.
You can only be under contract for 5 years under standard NBA contract. And if you're a free agent, you can only sign a 4-year deal with a new team, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Supermax player, you can sign you can be under contract with the team you're on for up to 6.
Okay.
So it's the year that's coming up and then your 5-year extension on top of that. And what people need to look at is the final year. The final year is astronomical.
Yeah.
How much money they can make in that final year.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that final year for these guys might be a 31, 32-year-old season where someone will be like, man, I don't know if I want to pay $70 million, but oh, he's a Supermax, so we've got to do it.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, Fox, if he makes All NBA this year, he's very motivated to make All NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah. He makes All NBA. He gets this massive, massive payday, which is crazy.
Do you think DeMar DeRozan being on the team helps or hurts his chances to make All NBA? I think it hurts it.
I keep saying this, and people will probably get annoyed with me saying it, but like, the top 19 players made the all in scoring made the all-star team except for De'Aaron Fox, who was 10th.
Right.
He finished 8th, and at the time he was 9th or 10th at the all-star break. He finished the season 8th in scoring, and the list of people below him is just stunning.
It's a bunch of All-NBA guys.
I mean, everyone wants to talk about Anthony Edwards, how he's so incredible. In his fourth year, you know, he's not that far behind De'Aaron Fox.
Mm-hmm.
De'Aaron Fox scored more points per game than Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. You know, he also led the league in steals. So he's not getting that type of respect that you would expect for a player who's averaging that. So I think my point is that if there's one thing that you worry about hurting De'Aaron, it would be the scoring. But scoring is proven to not be the end-all be-all for Fox when it comes to making an all-star team or making all NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. He went up. He was better than he was a year before. He averaged, 25.3 a game. 1 year makes third team all NBA. The next year he averages 26.4, whatever it is, 26.6, and doesn't make all NBA. It really does come down to one thing, and that's winning. And so if the Kings win and Fox averages 24 or 25 points per game and takes a little bit of a step back because of the presence of DeMar DeRozan, I think people are going to still give him the benefit of the doubt, and he will take that next step up into All-NBA status.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it has more to do with winning than anything.
Yeah.
The Kings were, he was 25-4-6 when he was third team All-NBA in 22-23. And that was the year the Kings were the 3 seed. Mm-hmm. Last year, they were 2 fewer wins and his stats got better and he did not make All-NBA. They're going to have to win. But also his stats are going to have to me, go up or stay about where they are. And that's where I wonder if the Kings get exponentially better, if they're a 50-win team.
Yeah.
Is it going to be, is the narrative going to be, because that's so much of what this is the narrative going to be, wow, look at De'Aaron Fox leading that team? Or is it going to be, wow, look at DeMar DeRozan helping get that team over the hump? That's where I kind of wonder, because we talked a lot last week about how there's a lot of people that aren't doing deep dives on these type of things. They're going to look at very specific narratives, who won the season, who Anthony Edwards last year was one of the winners of the season because everybody loves Ant.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of what it is.
It's really weird how certain players are viewed by a lens and others aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, but how you can be viewed under one lens one year and then never viewed that way again. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, he's incredible. And it's like, okay, he was better. And then you didn't recognize him as if he was incredible. It's like, oh, well, his team didn't win as many games. It's like, okay, well, he finished below Steph Curry's team finished below him in the standings, and Steph finished below him in points per game and wasn't nearly the defensive player and all of the, you know, the other stats, but you gave him the benefit. So there is this weird give and take when it comes to, like, who it is. And I was wrong. It's max money is 35% of the salary cap. It's not 30. So it's a jump between 30 and 35% if you're max money. And then I think we all know where the salary cap is going, but, you know, this next season, it's going to go from, 142, it's jumping to something like 156, and then into the 170s. So we're looking at 2 years from now when his contract is up, and if you figure $170 million as a cap.
I just got a text from my FBI agent, by the way, that heard you besmirch the name of American hero Stephen Curry.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to let you know they're listening.
That's what his first year salary
$59.5 million
could look like.
I would take that.
If the salary cap jumps to 170 and he jumps to all NBA, he could get a deal starting at just about $60 million bucks. Goes up 8% a year. And you're talking about that fifth year that we talked, you know, that we mentioned earlier. So all of a sudden that fifth, I don't even want to do the math.
This is why De'Aaron Fox is advocating for Malik Monk to go get his money, because De'Aaron Fox is doing the same thing.
Yeah, go get your money, because Fox is going to go get his money too.
Alas, Malik Monk staying with the Kings surprised us, surprised Domantas Sabonis. And we will continue discussing takeaways from Domantas Sabonis' camp. You said a couple of things when you were kind of rolling through what he said. They really jumped out to me. We'll get to that. We'll let you know what's happening with NFL Cutdown Day. And I have a fantasy draft happening right now, and I'm on the clock. So I got to figure out who I'm going to pick. We'll tell you who it is next. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insiders, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. We're hanging out with you till noon on ESPN 1320. It's Sacramento Sports Leader. Voice guy, help me.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen, brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
I have to push a button to make sure that our little intro, if you're watching on the stream on youtube.com/ESPN1320 or twitch.tv/ESPN1320, if you're watching on the stream, you don't hear the little intro music, but if you're listening on the radio, you do hear the intro music. Well, to have that intro music record, I have to push a certain button, and I had pushed that button a while ago.
Okay.
And then as the song started, I pushed the button again and turned it off.
Oh, no.
So I didn't record the first part of the intro. It's fine. Like, it's fine. It's not a big deal.
Okay.
That's just one of those frustrating things that, like, it doesn't matter, but it irks me. Like, I'm mad right now.
I know. You get frustrated about things that I, like, technically have no idea how.
Like, this doesn't matter. Like, if you can see it.
I see it.
Do you see this little blank spot right here? Like, I am going to have to go in and cut that out now, because then it'll sound bad on the podcast, because there will be a bunch of just seconds of nothing. So, like I said, very minimal thing. It's going to take me 6 seconds to fix. I'm just annoyed that I did that.
Yeah.
You know?
I do.
Fingers crossed.
I feel your pain.
Hopefully someone will do this for me someday. I'm still deciding who to pick in my fantasy draft. I'm up in my dynasty league.
Oh,
The homie Luke Easterling, who's in the chatty house right now.
Yeah.
Live from wherever. I think he's in somewhere in the Pacific Northwest. He's in the chatty house now awaiting my pick. I haven't decided yet. I'm hemming and I'm hawing.
Okay. So who was picked, with the last two picks?
So far, Marvin Harrison Jr. went number one overall
Okay.
in our draft. Let me see. I'm in the picks only chat. There we go. Marvin Harrison Jr. went first. Malik Nabers went second.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, who wheels and deals all out. I would be sitting there at 11 p.m. on a Tuesday night in June. And I get a text from Luke that's like, hey, Trevor Lawrence for your first round pick. Like, no.
is he a legit like wheeler and dealer?
Oh, yeah. No, it's legit.
But he's not one of those guys that just gives you bad trades the whole time?
No. It's trades you have to think about.
Okay, cool.
I've
played in leagues with guys who like...
Oh, it's the worst.
...think they're getting over on everyone, and then they get all angry. How come no one trades in this league? It's like, because all of your trades are just horrific.
Right.
No one would ever do any of the trades that you offer them.
Right. You're asking for a first-round pick for a backup tight end.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely not.
And then when I counter your trade... Just because your dude caught three touchdowns for the one time he's ever going to catch three touchdowns and you're trying to cash in, when I counter it, you always blow me off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you don't want to do trades. Like, yeah, I just want to do trades that are fair.
Luke said I would never dishonor my boys like that. See? That's why he's the homie.
Good for
you. There's sometimes where somebody will ask about a trade where it's a fair trade, but it's like it's with a player I'm not interested in letting go.
Okay.
So I just, like, somebody offered me a trade for Dalton Kincaid this morning, a tight end for the Bills, my first round pick from last year. Like, no, I'm hanging on to him. I just don't want to move him. I'm a big fan.
Okay.
Someone asked if you have to take a rookie or anybody available on waivers, but our teams are like 30 players deep.
Oh, yeah.
So they're just, anybody who's on waivers right now is probably not worth
having. It's not very
good. Having.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm limiting myself to rookies here.
Okay, so you had Harrison and Nabers.
Harrison, Nabers, Rome Odunze, and Brock Bowers went 3-4 to Luke. Caleb Williams was the fifth overall pick, Bears quarterback. Sixth overall, the pick right ahead of me, the guy took Jonathan Brooks, the rookie running back from the University of Texas, who went to Carolina. He's recovering from a torn ACL.
Oh.
So that's an interesting pick. My team could use some running backs.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to reach for one here. I'm deciding between two receivers.
Okay.
And a quarterback. I'm deciding between Xavier Worthy from the Chiefs or Ladd McConkey from the Chargers. I'm a big Ladd guy. We talked about him quite a bit on this show.
Yeah.
Or Jaden Daniels, the Commanders quarterback.
I mean, that's tough.
It's really tough. They're three good players, I think.
Yeah, and I think we all know that there's a possibility that Jaden Daniels could get like a big boost here. Mm-hmm. There's an outside shot.
Yeah.
If there's some way that they make a trade with the 49ers for Brandon Ayuk.
We'll get to that.
Who was, of course, his running mate.
No update.
No update.
By the way.
No update. I think I'm going to take Worthy.
That's where I'm leaning right now. I've reached out to some people who know things.
Yeah.
Just to get some confirmation on like, hey, this is what I kind of saw in the preseason. This is what I read. Just wanted to see.
You need to put a dollar in the jar. Did you reach out to Faraz Siddiqui?
No, I did not reach out to Faraz. I did not hit Faraz.
That'd be amazing. Hey, Faraz, I got this deal. It's like, man, I got 2,000 fantasy teams. I don't have time for you, Kyle.
I'm not going to make the pick yet. Sorry, Luke.
That's right.
Amazing. Oh, Chatty House weighing in. Huh? Ramsey wants me to draft Jaden Daniels. He's a former Sun Devil.
Oh, all right.
No chance.
No.
All right. Let's get back to the Domas stuff real quick. I do want to put a pin in the Brandon Ayuk Commanders thing.
Of course.
Domas said another interesting thing, and this is one of those things that this is why I think it's very valuable having a level-headed person such as yourself on this program, because when Domas says that, because he's been working with DeMar DeRozan, and he said something to the effect of the Kings are going to have to learn how to play around DeRozan.
Yeah.
That is a... Not anything crazy. That's a minor red flag for me. Because I thought the whole thing was DeMar DeRozan fitting in with the Kings, not the Kings stopping what they're doing to make sure that DeMar DeRozan can do what DeMar DeRozan does.
Well, I think with Domas, he prefaced that conversation with that DeRozan does something unique at a Hall of Fame level.
Sure.
And so it's within the best interest of the team to figure out how to play with that within their system. Like, that's what, like, this might not be a seamless fit. Like, mm-hmm. everyone keeps talking about, oh, again, his basketball IQ is off the charts. It's going to mm-hmm. be a seamless fit. It's like, okay, well, if it's a seamless fit, like, there are other locations that, that DeMar DeRozan's gone where they just haven't won.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like the Bulls were successful the last 3 years while he was there. They weren't. They weren't mm-hmm. highly successful, and they had a lot of talent. That can be coaching. It can be the wrong mix of players. It can be, you know, players not accepting roles. Or like, there's all kinds of reasons why that can happen. So, yeah, you need to figure out how to work within a system. And the Kings play a very specific system, but I think you also need a system buster. Like, Malik Monk is a bit of a system buster, right? But not really. Malik Monk does what he does within the Kings system. And that's something that I appreciate. He does. Like, I always considered, like, Bobby Jackson the ultimate system buster.
Sure.
Like, it was beautiful basketball, beautiful basketball, beautiful basketball. And then this guy who throws up shots at you, like, what are you doing? And then they go in and everyone cheers.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you, like, coach soccer and, you know, there's, you know, rec and then there's competitive, right? And then you get to high school and the mixture of rec to competitive is like very, very strange usually. Usually you have a lot more rec players or some players who've never played. Well, rec parents will cheer really loudly when their kid runs and kicks a ball as far as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
Comp parents usually are cringing the whole time. Like, man, you just booted the ball to the other team. We're not playing kickball. We're playing soccer. Mm-hmm. Please just make the 10-yard pass to the kid to your right that has wide open space to run down the sideline. Don't just kick the ball as far as you can, but every time you hear, you know, the roar of the crowd, it's because some kid kicked the ball as far as he can. It's like, okay, that's not really the sport, but that's where you kind of have to, like, adjust what you're doing and, like, sort of, like, your entire philosophy on how you're working with players. And I think for the Kings to be successful, they have to live in some weird world where DeMar DeRozan does his thing while they do their thing. And I don't know if that's 100% possible all the time, but at the same time, you have to appreciate a guy, again, like a Bobby Jackson, who does things that, like, realistically, like, weren't good basketball plays.
Sure.
But it doesn't matter. It goes in. You know, we can talk all of day long. I can sit here and break down the dynamics of point per possession, right?
And it's, please don't.
It's just like, unless you're hitting 60% of your mid-range jumpers, 60%, they're a bad shot compared to a corner three, because a corner three is worth 3 points and a two-point jumper. So the difference.
It's the analytics revolution in the NBA. Three is more than two.
Yeah.
Stunning math.
Well, a 40% three, because that's what the corner three is right around 40%, is worth 1.2 points. A 50% jumper from 18 feet, if you hit 50% of them, that's only worth 1 point. So you're falling behind 0.2 points per possession every single time down the court. After every five possessions, you're down 1 point after, you know, so it slowly, incrementally, like, adds up.
I feel like there's a way where you can kind of pick your, where DeMar can pick his spots. And this is where I think the basketball IQ factor matters a lot. Where they're going to run their offense and he may, maybe his shot volume goes down X amount, whether it's two, three shots a game. I don't know.
Yeah.
But maybe there are points where he's doing a dribble handoff and it's get downhill and kick it out to Trey Lyles or Keegan in the corner. And that's the right play. But you know what? Hey, crunch time. It's down to 90 seconds left. Taking that dribble handoff, you're going to be DeMar DeRozan. You're going to get to your spot and you're going to get a shot up.
Yeah.
Is that, like, that's where I think it's not necessarily playing, blowing up the system to make sure that DeMar DeRozan is comfortable for 48 minutes of 82 games. It's, hey, all those late leads, not late leads, all those games the Kings lost late last year. That's where I think, man, having DeMar DeRozan, who can just go get you a bucket outside of the scope of the system, who's going, okay, we know De'Aaron can do that. We know Malik can do that. Man, can Keegan do that? Can somebody else be the guy puts the ball in the deck and goes and gets him a bucket? Now they have one.
Oh, yeah.
Where he has played enough games, he's been in the league long enough, where he senses that moment. He knows, hey, this game's getting away. 12-point lead's down to 5. We need to score. I'm just going to go do that.
Well, that, and look around the league at the teams. Okay, so first of all, the two teams in the finals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Dallas Mavericks have two of the best one-on-one players in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's they were highly successful. You go to the same thing with the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, these are one-on-one players.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how these systems, that's how they are system breakers. The Boston Celtics shoot a ton of threes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dallas wants to shoot more threes as well, but you need these types of players. And I think not only do the Kings have one of them, mm-hmm, now, but they also have two because they already had De'Aaron Fox. And on top of that, mm-hmm, they have a third in Malik Monk. So you, mm-hmm, have these three one-on-one guys who can do something different in, mm-hmm, in crunch time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't want to take away from what DeMar DeRozan does, because for decades, the mid-range game was like, it was spectacular. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a huge part of the game, mm-hmm, and it's gone away from that. And I think having a player that can live in that area, and not only that, get to the free throw line is super
high. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Those are really, really big things to have on your team.
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully I think the Kings could live in the mid-range a lot more.
Yeah, the mid-range shot is only bad if you're not good at making it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not even the, hey, I can get into a rhythm 16-footer and I'm going to cash this, mm-hmm, at whatever percent. It's the guys who took a step inside the three-point line to shoot a long two. It's like, no, just stay out there beyond the three-point line, step back 8 inches, and get 3 points for your shot instead of two.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I think you're right. I think everybody knows the Kings are they're going to drive and kick and spray threes, and that's what it is, where I think there's going to be a ton of opportunities in the mid-range because teams are built defensively to let teams settle for that.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have a player who teams have to kind of game plan defensively around stopping him in the mid-range, so maybe it opens other stuff up. But somebody said in the chatty house, this is where Mike Brown comes in. That's where having a good coaching staff can kind of help facilitate all this.
Yeah, Mike Brown and Jay Triano. And, you know, again, you have the tie with Triano and DeMar DeRozan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the realistically how this works is that both DeMar DeRozan and the Kings give a little.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to give everything. They don't have to give in to what they're doing and all of a sudden become just a mid-range jump shooting team. But last season, we saw DeMar DeRozan take his career high 2.8 three-point attempts per game. If he could get to 5,
mm-hmm,
that 1.2 more three-point attempts per, mm-hmm, game, and if instead of shooting 33%, he can shoot 36%,
mm-hmm,
the Kings are going to be deadly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because everything else he brings, but for me, if he wants to score 20 or 24 or 22 a game, in order for him to get there, he has to take that next step as a shooter in this system.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Not for the Bulls. For, mm-hmm, the Bulls, it's like, hey, man, we're down. I need you to go to work, mm-hmm, every single time down. Go to work, go to work, go to, mm-hmm, work. Do whatever you take, whatever you need to do to get a basket.
What he did here in Sacramento against the Kings, that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's not who the Kings are.
No.
And the Kings aren't in that situation very often where you're just like, hey, so one dude has to just like sit there and do his thing the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are a lot of, just for sake of like pointing it out, De'Aaron Fox averaged over 26 points a game in a King system where everyone gets an opportunity to score. Mm-hmm. DeMar DeRozan can too. I don't know, 26, but yeah, like he can certainly average 21, 22 points per game in this system with, mm-hmm, this group of players, by doing a lot of what they do and then mixing in some of what he does.
Yeah. Like, I can't wait to see how this all shakes out.
Yeah.
It's going to be so interesting to see how it fits. Last thing, I didn't hear Domas say this. I thought I listened to all the audio, but maybe I missed something. He said Kevin Huerter, he's been working out with him. Huerter's in great shape. Shot looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Are we just kind of, I don't want to say we, am I just sleeping on Kevin Huerter as a factor for the Kings? Have I written him off too early? Because to me, I had him gone this offseason. He was going to get traded. And then he didn't. And now when we talk about starting shooting guard, I never really personally include him in that conversation. But is there a chance that Kevin Huerter is just going to shoot 40-plus percent from three again and open things back up for the Kings offense?
Yeah, totally. I mean,
is that just on the table and I'm just being a big dummy for not acknowledging it?
I don't think you're being a big dummy. I mean, I think the way that fandom works, the way that, you know, even media works a lot of the time, is that you're either in or out on players,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you can be all in on a player, and then things go wrong, and all of a sudden everyone shifts to all out. And then it's really difficult for people to climb back into the boat mm-hmm. and say, okay, like, no, we want to see what he has to offer. Like, we got into this discussion on Saturday on the Kings Beat podcast, me and Sean and Brendan, about, like, well, what's next for Kevin Huerter? And the answer is, like, he's got as good a chance, maybe a better chance
mm-hmm.
than anyone to start at the shooting guard position. Or if you want to start DeMar DeRozan at the two and move Kevin Huerter to the three, because one of them 6'6", one of them 6'7", and mm-hmm. maybe one of them could use a little bit more of a, you know, not as quick a guard. Okay. Like, that, to me, if you're going to have DeRozan and you're going to have Sabonis on the floor who aren't natural three-point shooters and the spacing could get bad, then, and you have an elite who has proven to be in the past mm-hmm. an elite three-point shooter who was third in scoring on your team, you know, the season before. If you can put that guy on the court, now I think there's going to be some defensive issues, but I also think that there's going to be like an oh my gosh offense with, you know, three really good three-point shooters and DeMar DeRozan and Domantas Sabonis on the court at the same time.
Yeah.
But, like, we're going to have to wait and see how it all plays out. I'm not convinced that that's how this is going to go, and Mike Brown is going to do what's best for all of the players, not just one.
Yeah, I'm... The more I think about this, and the more I look and we talk about what does this look like with DeRozan, and I might be moving back into the idea of Kevin Huerter starting. Because if that's what it was last year, if it was really, hey, he got knocked off of his off track by all the Chris Duarte stuff in the preseason, and then he started slow and just never gained his confidence back. He got hot there for a second, but it never came together the way we thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that starting him is going to bring that back and give you that additional element, even if it means sacrificing a little bit on the defensive end, I'm just doing that and figuring out the rotations defensively.
Well, I think that that's part of the discussion, but again, you don't make a like gigantic decision on a rotational piece just because somebody gets their feelings hurt and can't play in a different system. Like because at the end of the day, you need to do what's best for everybody.
But I think that's ultimately what is best for everybody.
Well, no, because what's best for everybody might be that you have an elite defensive player at the shooting guard position who shot 42% from three last year,
mm-hmm.
who doesn't need 12 shots per game to get things going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Keon Ellis. Mm-hmm. That could be what's best for the team.
Sure.
What could be best for the team is putting Trey Lyles in the starting lineup, moving Keegan Murray to the three, DeMar DeRozan at the two, and then having a bigger lineup. That might be what's best for the team.
Mm.
Like, we don't know until it all plays out, and you got to mix and match. Can Kevin Huerter and Malik Monk be like a super dynamic scoring duo off the bench?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe they can.
Yeah.
With Trey Lyles. Like, maybe that's your three-man bench, like, yeah. that's going to play a primary minute, is that group. And maybe that's how you get this thing done. I think there are a lot of things that have to be figured out, but that's where good coaching comes in, and that's where, like, preseason and training camp and seeing three-man rotations and four-man rotations and seeing, like, how players play together, how they play off of each other, that's really huge. And until we see it and, you know, like, sort of build up and actually play, we're not going to know.
Yeah, can't wait to see how all of this shakes out with the Sacramento Kings. I'm done sleeping on Kevin Huerter. I think Kevin Huerter is going to be a factor at some point or in some way.
No, I think
maybe it's as a starter, maybe it's off the bench.
No, I believe Kevin, backing. As of right now, yeah. And it,
he's like, one of their nine best guys, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And not only that, but the Kings, realistically, they need to keep his value up, whether it's for themselves.
That's a great point.
Or whether it's for a trade,
mm-hmm.
but they need to rebuild the value that he had the year before and kind of figure out what they're doing.
The 49ers announced some roster moves officially.
Okay.
No surprises here. Matt Breida and Keyshawn Vaughn, the running backs, officially let go. Punter Presley Harvin III did not make the team over Mitch Wishnowsky. He's gone. Offensive lineman Lewis Kidd also gone. And Jontre Kirkland, his release was reported a little bit earlier today. He is also gone. Nothing unexpected so far. Those final three will hit waivers. So if they clear waivers, the 49ers can bring them back to their practice squad if they like any of those guys in particular. Breida and Vaughn have been in the league long enough that they are released and unrestricted free agents.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts?
I have none
on any of that.
Okay, so I would say this. Breida's a guy that feels like they had him in camp. Number one, because he knows the system. Number two, because Kyle Shanahan always has a veteran that he's brought back that's been on one of his teams before. Mm-hmm. And so I wouldn't be shocked if Breed is a guy who is out there and they're telling, hey, man, stay in shape, because there could come a point this season where if we have a couple of injuries, we're going to call.
Yeah, I think he's a candidate to come back on the practice squad for sure.
Yeah.
Just veteran depth in-house. I think Cody Schrader, the undrafted rookie, I think he gets released and they try and get him back to the practice squad if mm-hmm. he clears waivers. But I think you're right. I think having a player that they know, everything hit the fan and they need to bring up a running back to play in 2 days, they know that Breida can just go do what they need him to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I
don't think anybody's itching to go sign him either. Yeah, so that's what's happening with the Niners. No Brandon Ayuk stuff yet. No Trent Williams stuff yet. I saw a report today that Trent Williams is willing to hold out week one. I think I saw that from ESPN.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's the whole point of the holdout.
Yeah.
Like continuing to have that leverage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you what. The Brandon Ayuk thing is what it is. No updates. If the 49ers botch this with Trent Williams, where they are starting against a defense that should be one of the five or six best defenses in the league.
Yeah, maybe better than that.
In New York. And you're starting your season with Jalen Moore at left tackle? I got questions for the front office.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're motivated to get Trent Williams back in the building before week one, but if they're sitting there going, yeah, no, it'll be fine.
We have breaking news.
We got breaking news?
CeeDee Lamb has reached an agreement today on a four-year, $136 million deal that now makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. The deal includes $38 million signing bonus, the largest ever given for a wide receiver. This is all per Adam Schefter.
So what were the years? Four and what? How much?
Four, 136.
So 30, quick math. Mm-hmm.
No.
4 and 136? Yeah, 38? No. 36? I don't know.
Yeah.
However much it is.
Yeah, yeah.
I was hoping you'd have the math on that one.
Oh, yeah, it's 34. My bad. Yeah, I got you.
Okay.
34. Yeah, I can do the quick math for you.
Thank you.
Let me just set this up in my mind.
Okay, maybe that sparks a Brandon Ayuk deal. Maybe that's what he was waiting on. The Cowboys blinked with CeeDee Lamb, and maybe Brandon Ayuk now has the numbers with the 49ers. Although, apparently, they have numbers down, and they're waiting to clear one last hurdle. I don't know. I have no idea.
It's got to be the biggest hurdle of all time.
You know what I can tell you? No update.
No update.
I'm going to make a pick in my fantasy draft coming up next. We'll also dive in. Is there another team jumping into the Brandon Ayuk sweepstakes? We'll talk about that as well. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Hour number two coming up on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320 at Sacramento Sports Center.